So I recently talked about how I had been thinking a lot about cardiology and age and how cardiologists are ageists, and then thought a little bit more about how I'm interacting with this in my sort of daily life with many of these 70, 80, and 90-year-old patients. My thinking has come about because many of my non-engineering octogenarian patients that I've sent recently have been doing very well after TAVI, and how well several patients have done many years I've seen recently after several aggressive medical surgical device therapies now 7, 8, or 10 years after their procedure was initiated. And that this is the complexity of decision making has become more complex because the patients are doing well and because we now have available technologies to treat these older patients. And that these patients who are having excellent vigorous lifestyles in their 80s and 90s often want these therapies. So, doing well in the short term, I've just had the occasion to send 7 patients for aortic valve replacement in the last 2 months, ranging from 81 to 96, 2 men and the rest are women. 6 patients had TAVI, 1 had a surgical aortic valve replacement. The ages, I said, went up to 96. The 96-year-old woman, now 2 months after TAVI, is enthusiastic to spend her summer in Greece and is enthusiastic for leaving and has been uncomfortable waiting around for her follow-up visits to go. So this is how it's going for our TAVI patients, and it's increasingly happening as we go forward. In terms of doing well in the long term, I've seen a few patients now just in follow-up and been struck by how well they're doing as I think back about decision-making at the time. A 91-year-old patient of mine just died. She was a smoker, diabetic, had mesenteric vascular disease, renal insufficiency. 10.5 years ago, at age 80, I had great difficulty finding a surgeon to do aortic aneurysm repair and aortic valve replacement with a composite graft. She did well. She lived for many years, as I said, 10 and a half years. She actually lived longer than her daughter, who had a significant special need, and she cared for this special need daughter for many years. So, an example of a patient who sort of pushed for an aggressive therapy at age 80 might not be considered aggressive now, 10 and a half years later, but then certainly was. I have a patient who I just saw this week, 97 years old, with a pacemaker who needs a pacemaker generator change. And she's living independently. She lives in assisted living, but lives in her own apartment, has an enjoyable quality of life, has family members she enjoys. She needs a generator change. At 97, I shouldn't, in my mind, think about not replacing the generator because of her age. I shouldn't behave like an ageist because she's living independently. But at 97, sort of give pause to thinking about generator change. My oldest patient is a 106-year-old patient who 10 years ago had a cardiomyopathy, a non-ischemic cardiomyopathy with class 3 congestive heart failure. I treat her with ACE inhibitors and beta blockers, and she's been asymptomatic now for the last 8 years. Do I continue her on ACE inhibitor and beta blockers at 106? My decision has been to do that. I think that's a reasonable thing to do, but it's certainly something to give pause about at 106 years old and let's consider other options. The other thing that's been something to think about is the complexity of decision making before, during, and after treatments with these older patients. This increasing longevity that we're all seeing in our patients has been mostly, of course, due to decline in earlier life, as I mentioned in my first part of this presentation. But heart disease, cancer, and stroke are still the most common causes of death. And of course, death rates have been declining in elderly patients, but we're obviously seeing a lot of cardiovascular disease in these older patients. The complexity about decision making before, when a patient sits right here in my office discussing options for management, the aortic stenosis patients, I think, are the best example of this. But trying to make decisions about the progression of the disease versus the risk of the procedure are really very complex. And I've told patients on many occasions, if I knew with certainty the patient was going to die in the next 1 to 2 years, it would be much easier to make these decisions. But knowing that the disease is going to progress and that the patient's options will decline over time really make it very difficult. The other thing that I think that most clinicians are capable of having a subjective evaluation about is frailty, but we haven't really adopted a very good objective strategy for frailty. So trying to make measures of frailty and using that as a way to help decide how to proceed is very, very complex. I would refer you to a really excellent essay in the New York Times in May by Baron Lerner, who discusses this physician's experience with trying to persuade a patient to go on have a liver transplant despite the patient's unwillingness, and using the term beneficent persuasion. I certainly haven't had the experience of persuading a patient to go ahead with a liver transplant, but I have on several occasions persuaded a patient to at least consider a consultation for aortic valve replacement. And obviously this is fraught with great difficulty because risks do occur, but having the patient not understand the risks of doing nothing is substantial. And it's a really complex situation in these older patients. Complexity before is sometimes actually really quite surprising to me. I had an 84-year-old pharmacist who had a non-ischemic cardiomyopathy, ejection fraction of 30% despite optimal medical therapy for 6 months, was not a CRT candidate. And I brought the patient in and discussed this with the patient's son, who was a medical school faculty member, high degree of medical of healthcare literacy. I really gave a very soft recommendation, if a recommendation at all, for considering defibrillator implant, but they were very enthusiastic. 6 years later, he's enjoying an excellent quality of life, has not had a defibrillator discharge, but golfs 3 days a week and is quite happy with his decision. But an example of a decision that I actually was surprised that the patient went ahead with. The most complex before decision making I ever experienced was a patient who is now 100 years old, 4 years after pacer implant. At 96, the patient came in with syncope and complete heart block. And the most difficult part of the decision was that the patient's granddaughter, an internist, recommended against pacing just on age. She was an ageist. The patient ended up having a pacemaker on my recommendation. The pacemaker implantation was complicated. She became delirious due to the drugs used perioperatively. The lead was dislodged twice, requiring her to go back to the operating room for lead reimplantation. But she was discharged after a week to 10 days in the hospital, 6 weeks in a nursing home, and returned to independent living in her own apartment at an assisted living center. She's now living 4 years later, doing well and enjoying a really good quality of life. The interesting comment on this, again, happens to us frequently. These patients who elect DNR or DNI, the family elected do not hospitalize status until 2 years later when she tripped and fell, broke her hip, and they sent her back for hip replacement at age 98. So these are really very complex issues before. Something that happened to me that I hadn't ever experienced is a complexity that happens after. An 89-year-old man I just sent for a transaortic valve implantation from an apical approach, had successful implantation, doing beautifully, but the rib that was resected on pathology found, quote, extensive marrow involvement with a low-grade B-cell lymphoma. What does one do with this? Of course, referral to oncology is the easy answer, but this is a complexity that seems to be relatively unique for older patients rather than something might be expected in younger patients. The excellent, vigorous quality of life of many of the 80 and 90-year-olds is also, I think, quite startling. Just a brief anecdote. I called this week to call a patient to ask how they were doing 1 week after I switched from metoprolol to carvedilol. The call to the patient's home at 8:30 in the morning was answered by her husband, who said she couldn't come to the phone because she was on the treadmill. Just remarkable to me that, you know, years ago it seemed like patients, elderly patients in their mid to late 80s would be doing handiwork like needlepoint, not being on a treadmill. So it's just a fantastic result in these patients. So I would say that that going forward, one of the things for, I think, physicians of all political stripes is the concern that many people think may be coming out of a national healthcare policy where many things are restricted just on age. I think most of us know that not all 80-year-olds are alike. Some 80-year-olds are much more vigorous than most 60-year-olds. And I think that this kind of healthcare decision making is going to be very complex for us, maybe made easier, of course, by hardcore decisions about restricting any procedures to people based on age. But I think that the idea that these meaningful conversations between physicians and our patients to discuss these risks and benefits are very difficult because we don't have a lot of data. A lot of it is anecdote, a lot of it is experience. But as these patients are aging and aging well, making decisions that are aggressive, even without data that's from large-scale clinical trials, is being done, I think, with pretty good success by many physician colleagues that I've talked to about these issues. I think that we are ageists, cardiologists are, but relying on age alone without additional factors such as frailty and quality of life and comorbidities is something that I think that most cardiologists clearly do integrate beyond age itself. So for the time being, I would say cardiologists are ageists, but the age is has to be three digits for us to be really very hesitant about proceeding with the procedures. So thanks for hearing my two-part cardiologists are ageist, and I'm interested in hearing how other physicians are dealing with age. Till next time, I'm Seth Bilzerian.